karma under attack. Now the world is changing, there's no going back. Danger at my shoulder and it's gaining fast. Questions I'm afraid of, but I have to ask. Who are they? And why do they hate us? Well, I was raised to believe in this American dream. All the greatness and glory, the way that it seemed. How God was on our side and God doesn't lie. So why do all these innocent people have to die? Who are they? And why do they hate us? Every color in the cloth has a history to tell. Ships across the ocean and the Liberty Bell. Heroes in the monuments, I know them by name. But now their granite jaws are shattered and their eyes are full of rain. My neighbor, she's a foreigner, I can't pronounce her name. When she talks about her homeland, her face fills with pain. She says she lost her children when the missiles hit. I don't know what to say, so I just change the subject. Who are they? And why do they hate us? I see the TV news and they're burning my flag. In some faraway land where it's just another rag. The looks on their faces, they make me freeze. How in the world did we make so many enemies? Who are they? And why do they hate us? Acts, rage and retribution won't bring anybody back. Justice is alive, so subtle and sublime. Well, I'd like to believe them, but we're running out of time. I never paid much attention, guess I should have known. Every faraway country is somebody's home. Empires rise and empires fall. The world is big enough, there should be room for us all. Who are they? And why do they hate us?
Welcome to Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, 3.5 hours of civil rights talk, and hopefully civil rights action here in Santa Cruz on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Robert Norris. We're going to be having a couple of guests in the studio as the show progresses this morning. We're expecting Michael True, local musician, a family man, and a diplomat who is attempting to negotiate or at least chat with Council members Kennedy and Premack, who have been big backers of the new dreadful downtown ordinances that are coming up for a final second reading, 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, day after tomorrow, at Santa Cruz City Council Chambers at 809 Center Street across from the library. Be there and just say no. So we got lots of stuff coming up. A lot of it is around these dreadful downtown ordinances, and we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be playing some interviews. And, of course, later today there's going to be a protest demonstration, sort of a bit of theater to kick off the summer campaign, or I should say to continue the summer campaign. That's going to be starting at 2 o'clock in front of, where else, Jackson's Shoes. It was, of course, Candy Jackson, part of the family business of Jackson Shoes, a nice woman, a friendly person who started circulating petitions that I think gave the city council and the police department the license to proceed with a whole series of ordinances that make the nasty downtown ordinances that already criminalize people for simply being homeless and poor downtown if they sit down, make them worse. And it's not a personal problem with Candy Jackson or any other particular merchant. It's simply that merchants and politicians and police need to be held accountable when they recommend and support systematic civil rights violations simply because of their apprehensions about their business or because they want to provoke, prompt a nicer climate downtown by removing the rights of some of us to use the public spaces for legal activities. Sitting that's not obstructive is a legal activity, or it should be, but in Santa Cruz since 1994, it hasn't been, and actually for a long time before that, if you were a poor or homeless person, you sat even on the beautiful brick planters that used to line the mall, you would find yourself with a citation, even though workers from lunch counters and workers from, eating their lunches from the local businesses were not so harassed by police. I've gotten tickets for that. Other homeless activists used to get tickets for that repeatedly, and now they're using other laws to crack down on poor and homeless people downtown. There's claims of a business downturn. Of course, we know there's a stock market crash that's happening, but there haven't really been lots of verified stats about a business downturn that I've seen that clarify some sort of, well, there's certainly no causal relationship between, I think, young people downtown and any problems that businesses have in any significant way. I suppose the other argument can and has been made that some of the older, more conservative customers have told the businesses they will not come back to the downtown because of the bad treatment they have suffered, either because they've been panhandled, had to run the so-called gauntlet downtown, observe people spitting, or have had lewd comments made to them if they're women. I suppose maybe some men have had some lewd comments made. Nobody's done that to me lately, but hey, I'm available. Anyway, we're going to be talking about all those issues, and it sounds like we're actually getting a phone call here. Let's just see what that's all about.
Hi, you're on Free Radio.
Want to know why I'm not going downtown?
Tell me.
Because the damn marijuana bags are pinners. The damn 20s look like damn freaking a half a joint. Their 8s look like a 20. And they're rude, dude. They try to burn you, dude. They ain't got no heart down
well,
there,
I
dude.
Think, you know,
they
ain't well,
they down
it, you know,
they're
I think
trying
I,
to pull a
dude you know,
team
I think,
where they can burn.
I think what we need, caller, I've kind of. What we need, caller, is a better market, perhaps someone like yourself, to watch the market.
The market sucks, dude. They're fucking blowing the scene by fucking burning people, burning each other.
Perhaps what we need is some quality control. Maybe you could set yourself up as a...
Well, I need to get about the fuck out of here.
Uh-huh.
Well, of course, we have some of those people at the top, too. You may have noticed, you know, in terms of national scandals. Have you ever checked that out?
Dude, I'm talking about shit that affects me every day.
I think that stuff at the top does affect you, caller, every day. That's just, you know, it seems to me to be the case. So, anyway, anything else you want to add?
Anything else you'd like to add here?
Yeah, they're trying to rob me. What am I going to do about that?
Well, gosh, man, you must find your suppliers in a better way, or perhaps you can get a subsidy from the merchants for attacking poor and homeless people downtown and supporting the downtown ordinances.
I just don't want to be insulted by idiots who think they can burn me, dude.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, maybe you put that message out to the folks on the radio, and they hear that, and of course...
Do I? No, I don't.
What is it?
It's everybody's problem if there's false advertising going on.
I feel threatened by these individuals burning me for marijuana. I think they should feel threatened by me because they don't realize that the next time I see them, they're going to get their fucking shit fucked up.
Feel threatened by the fact that there is you have so much concern. You're always attacking the bad homeless people and the bad drug dealers. These are, you know, as far as I'm concerned, these are a drop in the bucket compared to what they're trying to do to everybody downtown. And you know, I don't hear you talking about those issues. I hear you seeming to be supporting and bad mouthing folks downtown. Maybe I'm mishearing you. Am I misreading you?
What? They're not homeless, dude. They stay in motels off their trust fund money. Mm-hmm. They leave their parents because their parents are paying them to stay out of their counties.
Why would people struggling to sell small bags of marijuana, would they be getting money from their parents to do this? I don't know. I mean, have you done a research on this project? I'm not clear about this.
Sorry?
Because they do heroin, and they find marijuana is much more needed, so they can use that to up their high. Mm-hmm. And
you know, I'd like to get some stronger, clearer stats from you on this. Why don't you do some research on this subject and get back to me on the subject, and then we can actually talk about it.
I lived, Robert, real quick. Let me just finish this off.
Give you 20 seconds. Go ahead.
I lived on the streets. I know what the bohemian lifestyle is. I fully support that. I don't believe that the bohemian lifestyle should be clumped together with this other element that is popping up lately, the scene that is not kosher. There is a scene within the element of what you're clumping together with homeless, and you need to categorize between homeless with basic life issues and
yeah,
people that usurp their position.
I understand. This is a position.
This is a position you've often taken, caller, on the air, and I appreciate that. I would like to see some more specific stats from you. It sounds like a lot of anecdotes. Well, that's fine. Give us some of the details of your life and tell us how that happened. Hey, a lot of us have been on the streets, and a lot of us have different experiences. So thanks a lot, Mr. Janitor. We'll talk to you later. And sorry about that. Mr. Janitor, it's kind of hard to get a word in edgewise when you are you're rolling. You can talk a lot, and I appreciate that. But really, you know, I'm interested in hearing from you, since you've called in on the subject so frequently, some particulars. You know, how many people have you been ripped off by recently? What percentage of the folks on the street does that include? I don't know. I mean, it sounds to me like I understand you're trying to distinguish between homeless people and the street community and folks who are selling illegal, but frankly, less dangerous drugs than tobacco and alcohol for a living. I don't have a lot of sympathy for the kind of anger and rage you have, but I do appreciate that if anybody gets ripped off, it's not a good idea. So I hear that. You're tuned to Free Radio Santa Cruz, 96.3 FM. And anyway, the latest downtown ordinances that we're talking about and that I don't hear, I don't hear you talking about out there yet, but hopefully you will, are laws designed to criminalize everybody engaging in innocent and legal and actually socially beneficial activities such as street performing, playing music, trying to survive, indeed, by panhandling, or simply using public spaces to engage in association with other people, which is the way Santa Cruz sort of has been. I have in the studio with me one of the people who actually began raising these issues 9-10 months ago when police were harassing him for playing music and displaying his music on the street. That's musician Mike True, who's, I mentioned, has been doing some parlaying with city council members, and that's I he's got more stomach than I do. Although I left a message with Mayor Christopher Crone this morning and asked him to call into the show, and not just to talk about the downtown ordinances, but there's a very packed city council agenda for Tuesday, and I'm going to be talking about that packed agenda, which covers all kinds of things, and I'm not going to have, of course, time or energy. Or frankly, the interest to cover all of them, but somebody should be, particularly since we're entering a city council election season coming up, and that should be discussed, and that should be subject to some interest. Maybe we can get that old council watcher, scope it out, Scott Graham, to tune in, although he's usually been pretty busy these days and hasn't had too much stomach for the city council either. Yeah, we have a demanding guest in the studio, Mike True. Before we get into him, we're gonna kind of briefly step away from this subject with a look back at Sacramento, and I'll give us a chance to do a little setting up in the studio at the same time. Sacramento, I just came back from, where I did a little jail time, and will be going to trial on charges of illegal lodging. That's for sitting on the grass waiting for the governor to show up to respond to a petition that the Right to Sleep Walkers presented from all over the state of California, concerns by homeless and housed people that in every city in the state, or in many of them, Santa Cruz is certainly one of them, it's illegal for homeless people to sleep at night, whether on their own property in their own vehicle or on any public property, and on much private property as well, even with the consent of the owner. And that is a human rights violation, folks. I mean, I don't know why I should have to say that. And the governor was presented with a petition that said, let's make it clear that a law against sleep is a hate crime. It is a crime against a particular class of people. And while we were waiting there for the governor to respond to our petition, while we were waiting with other homeless people who had no legal place to sleep that night, we were arrested for, quote, illegally lodging. That's a crime punishable by up to a year in jail and a $1,000 fine. Might be 6 months in jail. I think it's a year. And it could be 6 months. And the second crime was failure to disperse from the scene of a riot. The riot, of course, was us quietly asking the police where we could go if they were going to drive us out of this public assembly area where we were waiting for the governor, which is open to the public at night. So it's an interesting situation. What you're going to hear now are some of the speeches that covered the situation for homeless people throughout the state before those arrests. And this actually was many hours before during the day, and actually the hottest day of the year, 110 to 112 degrees in Sacramento. A lot of good speakers. Some of the original tape was a bit distorted, but it gets better, so hang loose and listen. And remember, my main focus is on poor and homeless people. I'm interested in civil rights for all of us, certainly, but you can sort of use homeless people are sort of the doves or the pigeons in the mine shaft. You know, when they start to get hassled, when they start to get attacked, you can tell that's the indication of the times you've got to watch out. And I think it's really important to watch that. So let's listen to a little bit of that, and then we're going to be talking with Mike True about what he's learned recently, about his analysis of the campaign to not just to stop these crazy laws that they're trying to pass, and not just to get rid of the crazy laws they already have that are directed against homeless people and countercultural people, but how we can just generally move forward on a better road here in Santa Cruz. Stay with us, and give us a call at 427-3772.
And I think that that's wrong, that the cops want to take some people that are just wanting to go to sleep or get some resting because they couldn't get that much sleep the other day. They just wanted to get some sleep, and the cops just harass us. I think that's messed up, and I think that the camping law should go through because people might be having a picnic. They might be full. They might be just laying down on their blankets. But people, the cops still say that's camping. How is that camping when you have food and you're eating and you're talking? That's not camping. Hello. Camping is when you have your equipment out, your blankets, your pillows. I mean, that's camping, not just sitting at a park talking to your friends or your family members. So I think that the cops are just big mean. And I hope that the cops, I want to see one of those cops come and stay out here like we do, week by week, maybe month by month, but I want to see them live like we do and see if they can survive. Like we can.
Hey, everybody. My name is Robert Norris. I'm from Santa Cruz, and I brought along my friend Edwina here to join me in trying to find somewhere where it's legal to sleep in Sacramento. We have the same problem in Santa Cruz, that the authorities have this strange idea that homeless people can just go somewhere else. That's really the answer and the solution. Therefore, the thing to do is to make it as inhospitable as possible, so it'll just kind of move along, you know. And if they're here, be out of sight. And then occasionally, if we hear about people dying in the bushes or in a porta potty somewhere, well, as we did in Santa Cruz about a month ago, in fact, 2 weeks ago, Well, that's the result of drug use and alcohol, and that's just, you can't really change that. That's the kind of stuff we hear in Santa Cruz. The Right to Sleep Walkers, headed by Nancy McCready and Bob Hansen and Susan Dunn, Cobb. This came out of a meeting in Santa Cruz, a summit back in May, when people from different encampments came together from Portland, Oregon, from Seattle, Washington, from Isla Vista, California. These were homeless people who had set up, as Sacramento had at different times set up, tent cities. Places where homeless people not only say, we have a right to sleep, but we have a right to camp. We have a right to put a tent up over our heads. We have a right to cook a meal. We have a right to survive as we need to, because we are human beings. This is being done everywhere, and in some cases it's successful because people are refusing to leave and they're getting support from other people in the broader community and saying, look, there is, for example, in Santa Cruz, we have shelter for 40 people each night, but there are 1,000 to 2,000 homeless people out there. So obviously people have got to do something. And it's not even enough to say, as we are saying, and we should say, you should have the right to sleep. Yes. You have to have the right to sleep safely. You have to have a place to keep your possessions during the day. You have to have a place where your pets can be safe. These are all things you need, and these essentially, if there's no real affordable housing, means you have to have a camp. There has to be some kind of a camp where you can go to set up and essentially live temporarily. And that's what has happened in different cities. That's what these folks came together in Santa Cruz to talk about. And out of that came activists from Sacramento, from SHOC, who said, let's do something. Let's not just sit here and exchange information, but let's go to the governor. And more important, let's go to the community of people in California. Go from town to town to town and say, this is what the reality is for not just a small group of us, but for a lot of people in a lot of places. And people are being treated very, very badly. And it's not so much, gee, pity us, help us, wah, wah, wah. It's more, stand up. Stand up in each community and say, we are human beings. We are entitled to basic human rights. Let's do it together, because that's the only way we're going to survive, is together. When you go off by your own, when you go off in those sorts of situations, your safety factor drops. Your ability to do things together drops. And that's why when we're together here, we're much stronger. And that's why I hope that we stay together, this group of people, for as long as possible. Because I don't think this is just a sort of a nice hot afternoon of chitter-chatter, but I think we're trying to make some changes here, and I'd like to see that happen. It's easy to say, of course, because they've got the police, they've got the jails, but they always will have that. And here, at least, we have the numbers. We have folks together, and we have people watching from the outside. So at Santa Cruz, we have the same kind of problems as you have here. We're a smaller community, about 55,000 people. We have a city council that has just told its attorneys to draw up laws. It's not enough that they are already ticketing people for dropping cigarette butts. They're already ticketing people for chalking on the sidewalk, sleep is not a crime. They're already ticketing people for dropping breadcrumbs on the sidewalk at Food Not Bombs meals. Food Not Bombs has a group in Santa Cruz. One man was beaten and taken away because he would not take a ticket for dropping breadcrumbs on the sidewalk. He agreed to clean it up, but he wouldn't take a ticket for it, and so he was taken to jail and he was beaten. He resisted arrest, it's true, but the whole thing was provoked because merchants downtown want to get rid of us. They want to get rid of all of you. They don't like the way you look. They don't like the impression they think you give to tourists, so they don't want you around. Well, you know, people of color have the same problem, still have the same problem, but they have the same problem very dramatically. One of the speakers, the medical person, talked about how he came over from Cuba and came to the colored and said, you can't go to the colored. So we have that same problem. It's a civil rights problem, and it has to be dealt with creatively. Who knows what the solution is? I mean, there were some massive marches 30 or 40 years ago that got some changes for people who were black and people who were brown under Cesar Chavez. And we have to do something similar, and it's not going to be easy. It's not a simple thing. and you are more vulnerable in a way than they ever were because you are outside. And it's easy for me, I'm not outside, I'm not homeless, I live in a room in Santa Cruz, to say this, but it's my impression that what we need to do is get together and do what needs to be done. There are various ways to do it. One is to consider, for example, what was successful in Santa Barbara. In Santa Barbara, the necessity defense, and I don't think anybody has talked about the necessity defense. Has anybody talked about that?
Not yet.
Perhaps Nancy will talk about that.
Perhaps you will.
Oh, okay. The necessity defense is a legal defense. And what it says is, lawyers use it when the cops drag you in and say, you're guilty of sleeping. And they go to the judges and they say, yeah, they're guilty of sleeping, but they have no other options, and they had a necessity to break that law. It's like if you're in jail and you're about to be killed, you have the right to escape from jail, and you can't be prosecuted for it. Now, what does this mean? You get to sit around and try to find a lawyer, first of all, which is a huge trouble, and then you get off on that case, but the next day the cops come by and catch you again and mess with you. Yes, that's all true. But it's also true that in Santa Barbara, if you had you have a lawyer who has been taking every homeless case to court, what's happened there is that the courts have found you cannot do this. The higher courts have found you can't do this. And the police are getting tired of getting their cases thrown out, so they've stopped arresting people for sleeping in vehicles. And that's a very significant thing. So I think that this is something that Sacramento might consider doing too. And people, you as individuals, when you're given tickets, when you're harassed by the police, and again, it's easy to say and hard to do, and Santa Cruz are trying to do this, is document what goes on. Now, call in to, I don't know whether it's Food Not Bombs, I don't know whether it's Loaves and Fishes. Here in Santa Cruz, we have a group called HUF that I work with, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. And we have a free radio station. I don't know if Sacramento does. That's a pirate radio station that broadcasts 24 hours a day. But you need, in essence, the key here is to organize, to get together and make a showing to people in the community that, you know, it wasn't just some wild and crazy drunken person assaulting a police officer, but it was 17 cases of police going after 17 different people for such things as sleeping, dropping a cigarette butt, and so forth. You need to make that record. And you need to stand together to do it. I mean, you can be creative about it too, because, I mean, if you get hassled downtown here, I'd say the first homeless person who gets a ticket downtown, if the next day 10 or 20 homeless people show up to do a little protest at that spot where the merchant is, the merchants are going to tell the police, lay off the homeless people here. They keep coming back and they're driving away the tourists. And it doesn't have to be, you know, it's not a violent protest. You're talking about signs like this. You're talking about giving away literature that says, did you know that yesterday this is what happened here? And we want to let you know. This is your right to do. This is your right to be here on the Capitol steps or on the Capitol grass. There are other sort of things you can try. And some of this stuff is you can find by looking at the newspaper Street Spirit, which possibly you can get through the Homeward folks. In Southern California, south of Santa Barbara, in Los Angeles and Santa Monica, a homeless man has made it a point to sue authorities that arrest him. So when he gets arrested, for example, he goes into a restaurant and they don't want to serve him. He says, the police come and say, you're going to have to leave, you're being arrested for trespass. He says, fine, I'll go with you. I want you to arrest the manager for a false police report. And police have to make citizens' arrests if there is probable cause to do it. In fact, even if the police officer doesn't believe it, she or he has to do that. So you can turn around and do the same thing. If you know the law and the code section, you say, you're going to arrest me? Good, I want to arrest you. This is in cases of citizens' arrests, not so much in cases where the police come up and say, we've decided to arrest you because we think you're breaking the law. But oftentimes, police act on citizen complaints, and this is something that can be done too. So, again, just to summarize this, I think, and I apologize for taking so much time, standing together, sitting together, sleeping together, it could be fun, is really much better than doing this alone. And it seems like it's riskier because you seem like you're presenting a target, but you're always a target. And when you're out here together, you're a much bigger, more difficult target, and one that requires much more careful handling. And there are also attorneys kind of floating around on the outside who are sympathetic that might not be there when you're alone. So when you hear Cliff Crooks or the other organizers tonight or this afternoon suggest you join them in what they call civil necessity. Some people call it civil disobedience, but it's not disobedience to sleep. You have to sleep. Who tonight plans not to sleep? Raise your hand. I don't think so, right? Who's going to sleep? Raise your hand. Who will sleep tonight? I mean, I think it's all going to happen. Now, the question only is where, when, and, of course, with whom, but that's another story. So I encourage you to think about standing up, not just listening to some good speakers, but taking seriously what's being said and taking the next step, which is letting the community know that it's time to end this whole business of harassing people for just doing what they need to do to survive. Thanks.
So, can you help me out of my
Okay, everybody, somebody asked me to be the MC here. I want you people to meet an attorney.
I'm with it.
An attorney who is willing to help in any way, shape, or form that she can. So, please welcome Carol Repko. And listen to what she has to say.
Thank you. My name's Carol Martin Repko. I'm in private practice. As of last year, before that, I was with the Public Defender's Office for about 22 years. The reason I'm here today really is just to talk about the fact that I and other people I know want to lend support, and we want to do what we can to help folks who are homeless. Tommy Klinkenbeard spoke earlier, and he probably talked about the legal clinic that takes place out at between Loaves and Fishes and Shock on the fourth Wednesday of every month. I'm one of the volunteers at the clinic as well. And trust me, camping citations are one of the problems that people have and that we deal with really often, as well as other miscellaneous, tends to be minor incidents, warrants, and criminal charges. But I've been to Loaves and Fishes and also more recently Shock pretty regularly for the last few years. And so I just wanted to talk a little bit about my personal observations about what it looks like to me to be homeless. And I am here today. I am not a homeless person. Actually, I never have been. And I feel very lucky that that is my situation. But I have had the opportunity to meet a lot of people who are in that situation. And one of the things that comes to mind is that the typical, you know, citizen, people in the community who have homes and cars and, you know, resources, et cetera, they tend to look at homelessness in a certain way, and they choose to be ignorant about what it really means to be homeless.
And the reason why many, many people choose to ignore what it's really like.
Now you know what we went through on the walk.
Somebody stop that man. It's more comfortable for people to not pay attention.
Sorry, Carol.
Not your fault. Well, we're getting some support out there, all right? I think that people, like I said, people with the resources and the people who are not homeless, they don't want to look at the real issues or what it's really like for someone to be without a home. It's more convenient for them to figure that homelessness is a choice, that it's fun, and that it's a way of life that people walk into voluntarily. But the reason they think that way is because it makes it easier for them to ignore the problem in the first place. So, you know, one of the reasons why we're here is try to change that point of view. I wanted to talk a little bit about what I've seen when I go to Shock and Loaves and Fishes and Friendship Park, etc. I see people who are ill. I see people who are also mentally ill, people who need treatment with substance and alcohol abuse. I see people who are in danger. And don't get me wrong, I know I'm not speaking from personal experience, but from the stories that I hear and the things that I see, I know that on a day-in and day-out basis, being without a home is dangerous, and it's a terrible thing to suffer, and it is not a choice, and it's not beautiful. The last speaker mentioned the defense of necessity, And I just happen to know an attorney who is going to be litigating a trial next week. The defendant is Billy McManus, who some of you probably know. Mr. McManus, who I don't personally know, but I know of him, works on a part-time basis out at Friendship Park and Loaves and Fishes, primarily at the kennel, but he does a lot of other things, too. And so he's been in the area, and he's been essentially without a home for a very long time. He's been cited for illegal camping many times. And the defense that is going to be raised in this trial is that of necessity, which, as was explained before, means simply that this man camped in a place that was apparently illegal because there was no shelter available for him. So obviously, one of the things that our community needs to look at is how come we have people camping and sleeping in alleys and falling asleep on benches, and there is no shelter for them to go to. Thinking to myself, I have a car too, and I've gotten tickets before, and when I get a parking ticket, I get so pissed off because sometimes the reason I get a ticket is because I don't want to spend $10 going into a public pay lot. So I decide that I'm going to go outside on the street and put quarters in the machine, and I'm going to save a lot of money. The minute I get a ticket, I'm way behind. I get a ticket for $18 or $20, and I could have, might damn well have just parked and paid $10 for the day. And I'm pissed, and I hate the fact that I have to pay that ticket, but I do. I have the money. And what I think people don't realize is what it's like for an individual with no home, as an example, to get a camping ticket. Here's what happens. You'll either be cited, or you could be arrested. If you're cited, you are told that you have to go to court. If you can't get to court, and you fail to appear, then a warrant will be issued for your arrest. So if you're not arrested from the get-go, you ultimately will be. If you don't have the means and the resources to get yourself to court, and even if you do get there, of course, then you have the problem of how you're going to defend yourself against this criminal charge. And this is what comes down to the really terrible part of folks being homeless, is that too often, ultimately, people with no home go to jail, and it's got nothing to do with who they are, what they've done. Well, it does have something to do with who they are. It's because they don't have a home. Ultimately, that is a penalty that many homeless folks suffer, particularly folks with mental problems, but everybody, really. And the last point that I wanted to make, since I was with the Public Defender's Office for many, many years, or the reason I went there, really, is because I have a real passion for helping people who our society identifies as being powerless. The people in our society who tend to be targets of the folks who have the power and the money. And I guess the main point that I want to make today is that not to lose hope, and that there are people who care and who want to help and who are capable of doing that.
Thank you, Carol.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you very much, Carol.
Politicians have lying eyes, as sure as suffering multiplies, the rich will never be poor. As certain as in life you learn, the rich have money and time to burn. The rich will counsel you, wait your turn, in heaven you'll get some more. As sure as poverty plagues the land, the rich will give you a helping hand. As soon as mountains return to sand and oceans leave the shore, count on nothing in life so well, that if the rich go straight to hell, lots are something they buy and sell, they'll never enter the door. Rarely all the you need in life to be at peace in a world of strife. The company of a man or wife and lots of money in store. Life is simple and so complete with faithful friends and some bread to eat. A solid roof and a room with heat and stocks and bonds galore. The rich will probably tell you nay, it's inner riches that really pay. The rich have always got lots to say as they watch their assets soar. Count on nothing in life so plain. The poor have water, the rich champagne. The market rises to this refrain. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. Life is a strange affair in need of some robust repair. The rich don't actually have to care. The rich will never be poor. Maybe people are all the same, but the rich are playing a different game. You take your chances and take your aim. You'll never even the score. The rich can't help it if life's unfair. The richer people, they really care. They often mention it's hard to bear. They're burdened at their core. Some say no, but it's plain to see. The rich are different than you and me. The rich are different as they can be. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor. The rich will never be poor.
All right, it's about 4:05. We're outside a Wired Wash Cafe on July 9th, talking with
Edward Hale.
Edward, you have a portrait book in your hand.
I do drawings. I do drawings around Santa Cruz, especially of the music being played, people gathering, and oftentimes I find that people are very interested in owning one of my works, and I'd like
here to display for sale. That's illegal in Santa Cruz.
The funny part about it is that I feel that if I were able to do this work and draw people naturally as they appear to me in my perception, and then oh, God forbid, make a little money from it, I would be encouraged to stay here and to be a presence in downtown. And I tell you what, the artist is a creative person, and not only me, but all of us. And when we're driven out of town because we're not allowed to make money, then you know who takes our place is people that
commercial
don't
hacks.
People that and people that want to sell drugs. People that want to only lean back to, you know, as an artist, like to take away the ability to make money, puts me in the position where I have to give up my painting so that I can be what, you know. Be, you know what I mean?
Get a job, son. Now, let me ask you this. Have you been told by police you can't sketch? When were you told this?
On several different occasions. I'm a problem, you know.
You look like a problem. You're a pretty vicious-looking character with a peculiar-looking T-shirt. Looks like a watercolor T-shirt. Wednesday Market, Santa Cruz. That looks like it might be display for sale. I think that's questionable.
Exactly. I have a lot of these, and I break the law if I have them out. And show people what I'm doing in Santa Cruz. This, you know what I mean? If I show my ingenuity, if I show my ability to look at my surroundings and draw creatively a solution, it becomes illegal, and that's very frustrating to me.
So, again, your name is?
Edward Hale.
How long have you been in town, Edward?
Off and on. This last jaunt since the beginning of March. Before that, I mean, I was here a few months before that, you know what I mean?
Did you draw the work that's now on your chest?
I did 8 paintings one day at Wednesday Market. I did 8 paintings of the
Farmer's Market,
yeah, playing music and flutes and...
Well, I'm arranging to buy, get that, please. Buy. One of your T-shirts.
That's awesome.
Right, but you weren't displaying for sale. I simply demanded that you sell me the shirt off your back.
Because I'm voicing the frustration that I have with my inability to bring out my art and to show it here on the street. Because
it's not your voicing a frustration.
If it was more than me, I mean,
no, wait a minute. It's not
creativity.
Your frustration. It's the fact that you seem to be a good painter. I would like to get you to come to the city council meeting tonight and do a caricature of the city.
Everything
council.
Going on as quick as it's happening.
Right.
Quicker than that.
Will you
make 6-7 of them?
Would you be willing to come and do that tonight?
I think I could do that. I feel a bit
I think we might be able to raise some funds for that kind of thing. Tell me when the police harassed you for trying to display your wares.
Yeah, it was an evening. I was in the middle of painting a painting of a man playing a violin. A young man was playing a violin. And I guess what irked the police was a crowd gathered around me to see this watercolor.
Where was this?
It was in front of a jewelry shop.
Del something jewelers?
Yeah, by the cafes up that way.
Coffee roasting company?
Yeah. Oh, across the street from there.
Okay.
And,
From Starbucks.
So what happened was that there was a crowd that gathered as I painted this painting, and the musician loved it because people were flowing him money. And then after I finished it, a gentleman came up to me and said he wanted to buy the painting. And then I said, yeah, sure. You know, I looked around and I said, $10. And he proceeded to go to a police officer and say, I just bought this. Look. And the police officer came over to me and...
He was doing it to entrap you, this guy?
I don't know.
He was just stupid.
That's what happened, you know what I mean?
And what time? This was in the evening?
Yeah, it was in the evening, you know, prime time, like 6:30. And I just went and I painted every street musician I could see. And after a while, I realized money does matter to me, and I hate being broke when I could be making money. And it isn't right that I'm told by the hospitality police or other people that I'm not allowed to pursue painting. Like they tell me I can paint as long as I refuse to sell. As long as I refuse to sell, I can amass paintings. I can accumulate.
You can get them go for donations, and you might get people to, you know, to donate enough. You could say, you know, I mean, I think, you know, you should. Well, I think you should continue your work because I like your work. But I also encourage you to come to, perhaps we'll see you at council tonight,
right,
doing some nice political caricatures. If you can talk about the issue, you can tell the city council what happened to you and how outrageous it was, what you're saying here.
Yes.
And hopefully, so it's about 5:20. We're talking with
Jessica.
Jessica, formerly from Camp Freedom. And we'll talk to Jessica a bit later. Actually, we'll play the conversation with her a bit later. Right now, however, I want to, first of all, a brief flash from the jail. I just talked to a deputy at the jail, and she told me that Norman Friedberg, that's the man who was jailed for refusing to take a breadcrumb ticket. He resisted the police attempt to force him to stay, and he's now charged with looks like multiple felonies, 7 charges, 2 main charges consisting of 7 sub-charges, or assault with a deadly weapon, or force likely to cause great bodily harm to the person of a police officer or firefighter, committing battery on a police officer while performing his duties, resisting arrest, false ID, and 3 other charges, perhaps because of a number of police officers got involved. I don't know if they... obviously, the police officers weren't charged with any kind of excessive force, even though there were those observing who felt that Sergeant Baker, with his baton, and the female officers who originally made the incredibly stupid initial arrest or harassment for dropping breadcrumbs on the sidewalk. Again, I wasn't there, but that's my secondhand analysis from what I heard from other people. They aren't charged with anything, and they never will be. Even individuals who shoot people dead in Santa Cruz, like Officer Connor Carey, who killed Happy John Dine back in 1997, they don't get charged. It doesn't happen in Santa Cruz. In fact, the police chief moves to whitewash and cover up these things within hours after they happen. Anyway, Friedberg is still in jail. He goes to court tomorrow, for all those who want to go to court to check this out, at 9 a.m. in Department 11, which is the jail courthouse. So if you want to be present with and see how he's doing after these great efforts by law enforcement officials to stem the breadcrumb crime tide and the wave of the serious threat to the citizenry that's been, you know, sweeping over the land, you can come 9 o'clock tomorrow, Department 11, check it out. That's Monday, July 22nd. Lots of stuff here today, but most important, we have a guest in the studio who's been fighting for basic rights for street performers and street musicians for, I don't know, quite a while.
Years, yeah.
How long have you been doing this for? We're talking to Mike True. Hey, Mike.
Well, good morning to everybody.
Speak loudly and into that mic.
And into the microphone. Into the microphone.
Speak into the mic.
Actually, I'm third generation newspaper person, so I grew up with the fundamental ideas, concepts of freedom of speech and freedom of expression. And so everywhere I've gone, every time I've gotten out on the streets, where I've seen these freedoms being stifled, I've tried to make a bit of a statement. But here more recently, actually me being targeted specifically, but also downtown six on the rampage to clean up the streets.
You're talking about the businesses who are essentially the big business backers of Candy Jackson's earlier petition that's now been translated into codes that are getting a second reading that will be passed into law on Tuesday, July 23rd, right?
Yeah, unless we can stonewall it somehow, which at this point seems pretty iffy at best.
By the way, there's a caller who just tried to call in. Caller, if you call again, we'll answer your call. But maybe you should give Mike an opportunity to do a little speaking first. He's been waiting patiently in the studio, and here he is. Go ahead, Mike. I know that we played your original discussion of these issues. I guess you tried to discuss it in the Sentinel Forum and got swamped with bigotry.
Yeah, that was totally a waste of time. The Sentinel obviously is no friend to the people on the streets or First Amendment rights, which is really surprising being that it is a newspaper. But
not really surprising considering that it's the Wall Street Journal that, the same company that controls the Wall Street Journal controls the Sentinel, so I guess they're primarily, it's a money-making advertising rag rather than one which is concerned with any kind of significant issues of freedom of speech or any other principles that I'm aware of.
Right. Unless there's some kind of outrageous behavior going on from people on the streets, it doesn't get press at all. The opinions don't count for nothing as far as I'm concerned.
Well, they don't have to have outrageous behavior. You have ordinary behavior and outrageous behavior from the police, and you'll get this counterspin that makes it look like, the breadcrumb terrorist is at large instead of the reality, which is that there's been a massive police crackdown. Now, is that true? Has there been a police crackdown in the last few months?
Yeah, it's gone beyond a few months, and as I've said before, people are aware. They stopped allowing street artists to display their work on the streets last year in a very quiet and subtle sort of way. They apparently had some kind of a suit going. They were co-defendants with Monterey on restricting vending in the city. And
they being the city attorney in the city of Santa Cruz?
That's correct. And I don't know who the person was that brought the suit against them, but they made a big point in the last city council meeting of saying that they had won that case, and I don't know if it's being appealed or not, but they felt empowered by that, saying that in winning the case, all they had to show was that there were places in the community where people would have the ability to vend. Now, that means if you pay the permits, if you go to certain areas, if you rent a building or whatever in the institutionalized, commercialized process of things in people's minds, that then it's perfectly illegal or perfectly legal, and nobody should have any problem with that. The problem with that is that the Constitution was written as a revolutionary proposal that allowed people to actually be in public, expressing themselves, their sentiment, their political views, their religious perspectives, their their general purpose in life on the streets to the general public, and to have that carved back in such a way that it becomes basically meaningless is a threat to democracy in its truest sense, and should be fought tooth and nail.
Well, I think it's also true that there's a difference between a commercial vending activity where you are selling some generic product like toothbrushes that has no artistic or social significance other than its functional use, and I'm nothing against toothbrushes, or even a T-shirt, selling T-shirts that, you're essentially doing it to make profit primarily. It doesn't have any secondary benefits to the community other than, you know, the nature of the product. I suppose there's a concern that, large or many commercial vendors would descend on Santa Cruz and use their streets to hawk their wares. But it seems to me that there's a significant difference when you're dealing with an artistic community, whether it's a musician like yourself or an artist like Edward Hale that we heard about recently, you know, on that tape right before you came on. And I believe that there have been court decisions recently in Venice, California, and some years ago in New York City, the Letterman decision. Actually, I think it was more recently. The actual case started in 97, I think it...
98, I think, is when it was resolved.
I thought it was played out in 2001 or something. But
well, it's... Yeah.
In any case, the decision, I think, has something to do with the fact that you cannot bar artists from displaying their wares in the public sidewalks. Now, I guess what Barisone, our attorney, I should say their attorney, the attorney to the clique of city council members and merchants and, developer interests, the conservative structure, the center of the city, has apparently gotten is that, well, they're using the old time, place, and manner dodge, it sounds like, though I haven't examined and read their brief, which is that, yeah, you cannot, it's illegal to have a law that says you can't panhandle, but it's legal to have a law that says you can only panhandle between 1202 and 1206 on alternate Thursdays at the back of town. I mean, actually, that's an exaggeration, obviously. But the point is, if you can establish time, place, and manner places, you can establish those kinds of restrictions, time, place, and manner restrictions, provided there are places for people to table, places for people to panhandle. That's the argument of the city attorney. That's the argument that was used to pass the anti-homeless laws here in Santa Cruz in 1994 and to defend them in courts, though I don't think there was much of a challenge very far with those laws. They haven't really... there were some laws in San Francisco upheld by a conservative federal judge, but I don't think that we have actually, I'm pretty sure, in fact, that we haven't tried a similar challenge against the downtown ordinance downtown that actually that criminalized sitting down near a store. It's illegal right now to sit 10 feet from a store, even if you're not blocking traffic, and to give the merchants the power to clear away all people from their stores simply because they want that space available for people to walk by or to look in their windows is ridiculous. I mean, these are public sidewalks. And the idea, and it's also rather paranoid. It specifically targets poor and homeless people who may be outside those stores, may even be gasp spare changing outside the stores. So they don't like the reality. They want to change the reality and turn it into a community where those people are out of sight. In fact, that's really the motivation for part of the homeless services center on the edge of town. It's not so much to provide services for people, it's to get them the fuck out of town. At least that's been my analysis of it. And, they do provide some services, and I'm glad they do, but they don't provide the key essential services, which have to do with sleeping. There are space for 40 people to sleep tonight, and there are 1,000 to 2,000 out there who need to sleep legally. And people, folks, are getting tickets. They're getting $54 tickets for doing what everybody has to do every night. And, of course, I guess, if that doesn't raise your hackles, consider that the they're going after artists downtown, artists like Mike True here in the studio, who is trying to play his music. I played his music on the air. It's great. The city doesn't want you to have access to it unless he goes to city council. That's what you have to do, and gets a commercial permit. Now, there's actually a commercial permit coming up on the consent agenda for a guy selling fruit at the city council meeting on Tuesday. City council meeting on Tuesday is interesting in that they're holding it at an unusual time. They're holding it at 1 o'clock and 7 o'clock instead of 3 o'clock and 7 o'clock. Now, it might have something to do with the fact that there is a large protest planned by the Mamre Manifesto, Downtown for All, Huff, Green Party, other groups, for 3 o'clock. So the city council, which would normally meet at 3 o'clock on Tuesday, is not going to meet at 3 o'clock. It's going to be gone, so it won't have to deal with these grubby protesters and so forth. They also have canceled the 5 o'clock meeting of the Redevelopment Agency and put it instead at 11 o'clock in the morning, which is a rather strange time for that agency to meet. They're the agency that actually deals with low-income housing and essentially funneling a lot of money to developers to do their thing downtown when it masquerades as some kind of redevelopment projects that are supposed to benefit all of us. I'm sorry, Mike, I got a little carried away here. Why don't you
know what
you're saying?
And you were right in saying earlier that the actions that are being taken against people that are homeless basically is a good barometer for knowing what's happening to the public at large in terms of the legal system and the rights that are being abdicated by the laws that are being passed and so on and so forth. So it's definitely good to keep an eye on that. But specific to the artists and musicians issues, I had a meeting on Friday with a couple of individuals, including Councilmember Premack and Sugar, which...
Councilmember Kennedy wasn't involved, huh?
I'm sorry. Scott Kennedy, I'm sorry.
Scott Kennedy and Mark Premack.
And Mark Premack. And thinking that we could discuss with them, you know, the implications of the restriction in terms of vending art. And basically, their whole premise in that particular discussion was that the downtown ordinances were supported by, what's the phrase they use, the majority of people in this community. They keep throwing that out, the majority of people in this community support us, support these amendments. And I, you know, time and time again ask, aren't you getting emails that suggest that maybe you're railroading this thing through and not really using, not really getting public input and having a true idea of what public support is actually there? And they basically blew that off. They just said, no, this is what it is, and this is what's happening.
You know, let's stop right there, because I think that's a key point. Whether you agree or disagree with the substance of the proposals that are coming forward, and for those who don't know, there's a proposal to make it illegal to lean against a building if the owner doesn't want you to, make it illegal to be anywhere within 12 or 14, they haven't decided yet, feet to sit down on the sidewalk at that distance from a storefront, from a sidewalk,
from telephones,
from a telephone, from a drinking fountain,
ATM machines.
From an ATM machine, it's going to be 50 feet, an even longer distance,
right.
Outdoor ATM or change dispensing machine, like right. The change machines down across from the Cinema 9. They want to make it additionally expand the forbidden zone for soliciting, that is to say panhandling, up to 14 feet, and that includes from a bench and from any crosswalk and from any street corner. They also want to make it so that signs, this is really a very significant change that is being overlooked by a lot of people, including the council members. Apparently Ed Porter himself, who proposed it, didn't realize this when I pointed it out to him. Right now it's legal to hold up a sign any time of the day or night from a seated position in a group of two, all of which would be illegal if you said verbally, "Can I have some money, please?" You can't say, "Can I have a dime?" or "Can I have a piece of bread?" after dark in Santa Cruz, anywhere in town. It's illegal, folks. Now, that isn't a First Amendment violation. I don't know what is, but it hasn't been challenged in court, as far as I know. It's also illegal to do that in a group of two. So you don't want to menace people by doing that in a group of two. And it's also illegal to do that from a seated position on public property. So you can't do it if you have to stand up and say, excuse me, sir, can I have a dime? And you have to do that during the daytime, and you have to do that, I think you have to be 10 feet away from storefronts, and then it'll be 12 to 14 feet. When they add that holding up a sign now comes under the same restrictions, or having any indication that you are seeking money, so for example, an open cup, an open guitar case, these are now considered to be aggressive solicitation.
Right.
Solicitation.
Right.
And that means that you can't do it after dark, you can't do it from a seated position, and you can't do it from in a group of two. And that is going to be very significant in terms of restricting. Plus, of course, you can't do it 14 feet from a bench and so forth. Although there is an exception for people who are performing, provided you're not trying to get money for it. So it's okay to street perform, provided you don't have an open guitar case 14 feet from a bench. But if you're not, if you are trying to, you know, make a little money, if you do accept any money, or if somebody walks over and entraps you, as we heard done with Edward Hale, the sketch artist, earlier in this show, you know, boom, bang, $162 ticket. You've gotten a number of tickets, haven't you, Mike?
Right. I've gotten three tickets and one very specific incident of an attempted entrapment by Sergeant Baker, where he actually came up to me and in his audacity, and asked and said, you know, hey, I really like your music. Would you sell me a CD? Knowing that I didn't have any CDs displayed, but that I might have some in my backpack, but that because they had previously confiscated CDs out of my backpack. And I just looked at him and said, you got to be kidding me, and handed him a card that has my website on it and said, you can order them off the website, and walked away.
Now, did Sergeant Baker put in an order off the website?
Absolutely not.
Well, maybe he changed his mind. Shouldn't we give the dear sergeant the benefit of the doubt here?
Well, I'm going to say this because I wanted to get this in on this particular program. I currently have an agreement with a lawyer who is going to represent me in a federal court to go after this particular issue in terms of freedom of speech. And the inclusion of vending, actually selling art, is and has been upheld in other places as a freedom of expression. It doesn't need to be solicitation. It doesn't need to be donations. It's specifically if somebody wants to reward you or to give to you personally for your efforts in terms of whether you're verbally saying, let's organize, you know, a union, or whether you're saying, here's some art that I have that is something that, you know, can be shared with the world to improve the cultural base and so on and so forth. Those are all expressions, freedom, you know, freedom of speech and freedom of expression, and cannot be categorized as being the selling of merchandise, wares, or any other of that garbage that they've put down. Now, in that same meeting with Mr. Premack and Scott Kennedy, both of them shook their heads and said, we have nothing against artists selling their goods on the streets. We have nothing against CDs being sold out of guitar case.
Did they ever to pay your tickets?
No, they did not. I said, then how come I'm getting tickets? And they go, you must have pissed somebody off. I go, wait a minute now. I was at an arts and wines festival. That's where it started this particular time around.
When was that?
That was June, I want to say 18th or something along those lines.
Uh-huh.
And on that particular occasion, they were literally sweeping the streets of anybody, any artist or musician, because I talked to several other people out there, who had any kind of display or were actively looking for donations by having open guitar cases and so on and so forth. And they were telling them, not today. And I argued the point with them. I said, why is today any different than any other day? Do these people own the streets? And in effect, they said yes. Now, to me, the privatization of community streets is the major issue here. To say that certain groups, I don't care who they are, can come in and literally buy up the rights to have it's us only on the streets, unless there would be some kind of a referendum on a vote from the citizens of the city to okay that, I think is preposterous. It's absurd. It's basically the city council selling out to the commercial interests is what it boils down to.
Well, you know, I think, devil's advocate here, that the there are occasions when they close the streets and these private interests pay for policing and so forth. I don't know how far their rights actually extend. I don't think they can exclude the public. Now,
no,
whether they can exclude a performer, it seems to me that they can't really do that either. That's just a part of the natural scene. I'm wondering, have they at other times told you you can't play downtown, or was that the only time? We got a call coming in here too. You want to hold that?
Yeah.
Hold that question. We'll get our caller.
Hi there, caller. You're on free radio.
Hi, Robert. Listen, I just want to throw in a possibility for action as
mm-hmm.
opposed to talking about the Constitution, which is all well and good, but it
mm-hmm.
doesn't get you very far, as everybody has learned by now. My old friend Saul Alinsky would have said that the way you deal with an ordinance, let's say that you don't like, I've just been, you know, this business, for instance, about leaning on the wall. Are there enough people resolved enough and clear enough about what they're doing? You go and you lean on a wall, and then you get arrested, and then you the next person goes up and leans on the wall, mm-hmm. and then the next person goes up and leans on the wall, and then the next person, and so on.
Yeah, Tom, you know, if you were probably around when we did that with the sitting band back in 1994, and it actually worked, there's an interesting history of how that worked, because the sitting ban used to be worse than it was. It used to bar sitting anywhere on any sidewalk. Now it bars sitting 10 feet from a building, 50 feet from an ATM, 4 feet from a drinking fountain or telephone on commercial district sidewalks, and that's because people did exactly what you said and because lawyers took it into court and challenged it thereafter. Both.
Yeah, okay. No,
the problem
no,
is
I,
that
I
2002 is not 1994.
Take that as a model for the next action,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
even as far as the sitting goes.
Yeah.
I mean, if they then make the law better, but still not acceptable,
right.
Simply violate that. But the way to handle a case is to have it massively violated, to make it cost them. That's
mm-hmm.
that's the basic.
Oh yeah, no, I mean I agree with you completely. The problem there are a couple of problems with that, but I think it's a very good approach. We planned to do that in 1994. We massively violated the sitting ban, and they just ignored it. What they did was they moved in on individuals in the days ahead and ticketed them individually
right.
when there weren't other people around to do a mass sit-in. And most people don't have the time to take time off from a job, do a sit-in every day. You know, they might be able to do it once. They might be able to do it twice. So we had to develop other tactics, and we did. Actually, it was the police department in its supreme arrogance, or possibly the city council members that they spoke to. I think the police department is a law unto itself in Santa Cruz.
Well, how big a problem is a job? I mean, it seems to be.
Well, you got to talk to the community, Tom. I've been trying to get people to violate the sleeping ban for years.
Well,
you know?
but in a massive organized way, and then
right.
another important thing, because this used to happen in Berkeley,
mm-hmm.
is that the way the system would try to protect itself would be to say, well, we're gonna try you massively, and the way to do that is to resist that,
mm-hmm.
you know, and to make sure that every single person who gets arrested for any reason gets tried on a different, you know, gets tried separately from the next person.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only way to make the system to make it cost the system,
mm-hmm.
and that's the only time that they're gonna pay attention.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
is to insist on your right to be tried separately instead
mm-hmm.
of consenting as the mistake was made several times in Berkeley during the way back. And
well, there are a variety of tactics that are used. Sometimes it's best to be tried together because you can engage in a kind of solidarity. It doesn't burden the courts in quite the same way, but it can produce a situation where they have to drop all charges. And it's interesting, for example, in jailhouse solidarity, if you refuse to leave the jails until all the people are released, if you refuse to accept a lesson charge until all the people get lesson charges, that works pretty well.
That's the right idea.
And I think your suggestions are excellent, and we are actually doing a protest today at 2:00, which may involve activity which some members of the police department or the law enforcement agencies may regard as illegal. For instance, some of us hope to be able to chalk out in erasable chalk, which is not vandalism, the forbidden zones that are going to be passed into law by city council in 2 days, and to let the community see just how little space will be left. And I suspect that people are going to get hassled for doing that if they do that. Also, I mean, it's also a question of resources. You know, if a lot of people show up and you get a lot of folks who are willing to do this, then it's great. And in fact, I do encourage people to come on down 2:00 in front of Jackson's Shoes, which is a hop, skip, and a jump from the coffee roasting company in Starbucks. You know where that is on Pacific Avenue. And that's right down the street from Borders. So come on down, and Tom, thank you for these suggestions. Anything you want to add?
No, that's it.
Hey,
thanks. You seem to be on the right path.
Hey, thanks, Tom.
Okay, bye-bye.
Yeah, I do have, I had gotten to the point where I got so frustrated by trying to deal with the city council and going to all the committee meetings and then not being even considered, let alone heard, and even with a face-to-face with these two guys Friday, I was still basically ignored. Again, they said, you know, there are no ordinances that say, they said this, there are no ordinances that say you cannot display and or vend art in this city. And I said, you know, again, I got tickets for this. So, as a result of this...
Did they ask to see the tickets?
No, but I had them with me.
You mean, I mean, did you show them to them?
No, I didn't.
But they weren't terribly interested, I would imagine.
Their whole thing was, you know, we have art councils, and if you want to organize art events, you should work through the different organizations that are oriented towards this. And again, what it does is it
destroys the traditional character of the Santa
Cruz
streets. Exactly.
And it still takes away from the freedom of speech situation.
And the freedom of the rest of us to be able to receive and appreciate what you do in the music you make, the art you make, and to appreciate the benefits that come from other people coming to town to see that, you know, and to be a part of that process. It's really a kind of a pernicious situation. And I think, again, we have to emphasize, or I want to emphasize, that this is all being done in a rushed, really, really rushed fashion. I'm going to go through that in a moment.
Yeah, I also wanted to say real quick that they really tried desperately to avoid connecting the downtown six with these new ordinances. They specifically said, no, this was committee formed and blah, blah, blah. But Borders, Jackson Shoes, Artisans, John Michael Studios, Santa Cruz Jewelry and Gifts, and the Hat Shop were the ones that initially pushed for these ordinances. And as such, if we are going to undo these, it seems only logical that there be a massive boycott of these particular places. If we can pressure them to undo what they've done, then, you know, we might go somewhere with this thing. If we say, no, it's the city council doing this now, that puts them in the background, and that's where, you know, people are going to make their mistakes in terms of who they're voicing their opposition to.
I think it's important to go to every store owner downtown and say, we want to see a little statement in your window. We support the rights of artists, musicians, and poor and homeless people to have access to public spaces, and we oppose these new downtown ordinances. And if you don't get that, then you join the boycott list.
Exactly.
That could be one approach.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah. I would agree with that, except the problem that is really going on, and I never went to the council meetings mainly because I thought it had been predetermined. And of course, it's all in violation of the Constitution, and it's all in violation of rights. And the paradigm now is a mall or downtown San Mateo.
Mm-hmm.
And what has happened is the demographics of this city have changed so much that, unfortunately, these guys are right when they say we represent the majority of what they want, because the majority are no longer the people that once were Santa Cruz.
Now, you're a man who does a radio show yourself.
Yeah.
Is that, how long have you done that radio show for?
6 years.
And have you noticed a significant shift on your show, or do you think you have sort of the faithful with you?
Oh, the faithful with me.
Uh-huh.
But then, you know, I mean, hey, these are the night people. They never change. Night people are always very strange.
But, you know, I have found, and it isn't from a lot of tabling, it's only from a small amount of tabling recently, that I don't really, and I haven't done door-to-door, maybe I should talk to people who've done walk door-to-door, that people really don't particularly, you know, they aren't big supporters of these ordinances. They think they're kind of stupid, and that this is really coming from a smaller group of people. Now, it's true, if you read the Sentinel, every single letter,
yes,
almost without exception, there's a couple of exceptions, but huge numbers, majorities, are being printed that look like they are support criminalizing leaning against a building, right, sitting on the sidewalk, playing street music, having a political table on the mall, except within very limited circumstances. So, and hacky sacking, of course, as well as...
Hey, you might get encased in a bubble. Float off to the sun.
That's a good
point.
The
bubble blows and you fall.
Cyrano de
Bergerac. Paralyzed.
Striking back, yeah.
Robert, I've gotten...
There are horrible things that can happen.
Yeah, Robert, I've gotten the same input from people on the streets. The majority of people either don't know what's happening with these ordinances, or they are basically opposed to what they represent in terms of restrictions of freedom. I have people walk by and ignore the whole thing, which means that they could care less, or they are in favor of it. Apathy.
Yeah, it is apathy.
That's what's ruling right now. Apathy is ruling.
I think the Sentinel has presented it more as a sanitation issue. Mm-hmm. Forgetting the wonderful, marvelous nonviolent resistance that's going on. There was never a problem with urine anywhere near Alibaba and all of that.
I sat at tables for 7 years since I've been here. Never, since they put the fence in, you can't sit in that fenced-in area because nonviolent resistance has taken over and people are pissing against the wall.
Are you, really?
Good for them.
Huh, I didn't even know
that. I approve.
Well, you know,
I approve. That is nonviolent resistance. You asked for it, man, you get it. It's like the ridiculous music they were playing.
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I was talking about facetiously partially, but partially seriously, about having a piss-in around the issue of customer places like the coffee roasting company locking their bathrooms and yet selling copious amounts of coffee.
Yeah. Which is a diuretic.
And, I mean, I was thinking we should get four people with sheets, hold it up outside, and establish a public urinal on the sidewalk. It sounds a little gross, but what do you do to get these people? Emily Riley, who's supposed to be, she was on the bathroom task force and didn't set up one bathroom, mind you, although they set up five porta potties, now they're getting rid of them. Now she moves in with more, frankly, shit. And this is a kind of a nastier kind of shit than the kind that comes out of our bodies because it affects our spirits and it affects the quality of our life.
Well, the homeless people, first of all, do not have a right to defecate or urinate, period.
Well, that's for sure.
That is supposed to be taken away when they lose their home.
Well, colostomy bags and catheters has always been my suggestion.
Absolutely.
Right.
When I was in eighth grade and my 60 years ago, whatever the hell it was, and my 55 years ago, and my principal, because somebody wrote fuck you on the door or something, locked the bathroom. I started a little protest, which ended up to be a protest of one, of carrying around a bottle all the time. I got into one of... That was one of my first political actions.
You anticipated you might be drug tested at any time, I see.
Well, this was 55. Yeah, who drug tests? It was just, you know, I'm going to have this bottle with me, and if I have to take a leak, I'm going to piss in the bottle.
You were very forward-looking.
Yes. So I would some kind of action of this sort... I mean, I have friends from out of town who are respectable, middle-class, working people who spend money who will not come to downtown Santa Cruz because they can't piss. There's nowhere to take a leak. They're customers. It's like what they did in New York at the Port Authority when they wanted to get the homeless. And they started playing this hideous Sibelius stuff, which will drive anyone nuts. And then they said, well, these homeless, they're sleeping on the benches. Let's take the benches out. Wait a minute, I'm waiting for a bus, man. It doesn't come for 2.5 hours. You don't want the homeless sleeping on the benches, do you? I guess you're right, sir. I'll just stand here, and I'll forget about my phlebitis and the bad hip that I have. I mean, this is idiocy.
Well, I think Jim Lang has imported New York's Giuliani tactics to Santa Cruz because Brian Koepke of Food Not Bombs found that half the benches have been removed, though Parks and Rec denies it and says that they've simply been moved around. I have yet to see, a new map of the new locations of these removed benches, and Chris Krohn has not followed up on that, just as he's followed up on very little else. But again, I don't expect...
Hey, but he's a socialist, please.
Chris Krohn is a linguine, I'm afraid, and I don't say so with any malice anymore. I was really angry with him for a while, but it's like shouting at a dog, be an elephant, be an elephant. Where's your trunk? It doesn't work. It's sort of, you can't really... But, it is true. I'm going to be playing later in the show some... I've invited Krohn to call the show, but of course he has declined to do so far as I know. But I asked, for example, we talked about the rushed process that these ordinances were being passed, the unseemly haste that they're being zipped through with. He promised at the last council meeting that those of us, and this is traditional, at a public hearing when laws are to be changed, individuals get 3 minutes, organizations get 5 minutes, period. They don't contract the time. Now, how much time individuals got?
One.
They got 2 minutes. How much time organizations got? 1 minute.
1 minute.
So
okay.
the time was more than cut in half. And Krohn, not only, I would have to say he collapsed on it because I think if the council had supported him, he wouldn't have opposed it. But he didn't even propose it. All he did was he let Kennedy and Fitzmaurice essentially run the show. I mean, that's what he's done for the last year as mayor anyway. You have essentially the mayor who gave us the last downtown ordinance, Scott Kennedy, the guy who is the head of the Resource Center for Nonviolence, and yet he banned begging after dark in Santa Cruz. Peaceful, spirit-changing. And now he's prepared.
But that goes beyond the Middle Ages. You were allowed to beg in the Middle Ages.
Exactly. It's post Middle Ages, that's for sure, or pre Middle Ages. I mean, now he's going to make it so you can't even hold up a sign after dark. You can't even silently sit there with a cup at a political table after dark.
Well, when you draw the 14, and I'll be down there at 2 o'clock. When you draw the 14 feet, you're going to find out there's nowhere left on the side. There's no door that's more than 28 feet away from the next door, which is 14 feet from
right.
each side.
And you're going to have lots of people sharing those little bitty spaces. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, there actually are some spaces left, but as Mike points out, a lot of people will be sharing those spaces, and most of those spaces are going to be within 4 feet of the cars
right.
parked along the sidewalk. So you're going to be interfering with people getting in and out of their cars. It's going to have exactly the opposite effect in terms of, you know, allowing, encouraging people to come downtown to patronize these shops, as you would think. And so no doubt they will then propose a law that eliminates people from a 4-foot zone near the curbs, because after all, that's a safety measure, you see. All this, of course,
yeah.
is being billed as a hacky sack is being billed as a safety measure, instead of taking it as a kind of a vibrant sport downtown, and instead of pursuing what I thought was really a good approach, which was getting together residents and merchants and people from artistic aspects of things, street musicians, street artists, panhandlers, to really, you know, work it out, talk, and share, and actually most of the valuable conversations happened after the meetings. People would actually, merchants who never talked to me before, sat down and talked with me.
Right.
It was amazing. And, you know, it was good, but it was all phony bullshit. Not from the merchants. I think they sincerely want to address these issues. But the city council members, Porter and Riley, were holding these meetings in order to ram through ordinances that had already been concocted by the police, already been set forward. In fact, the police are using the Candy Jackson petition to go further than the Jackson petition wants to go. The Jackson petition proposed 12 feet. The police are proposing 14 feet. You know, and there are other things. There are a number of other deforms that are being proposed that have nothing really to do with what Jackson wants. And everything she wants is being given by police actions unilaterally and independent of any legal changes. So, for example, the flower lady in front of the Cinema 9, mm-hmm. after being told 4 different stories about how she had to display her merchandise, is now told she can't
right.
display her merchandise.
That's what
at
they
all.
Did to me, too, yeah.
And apparently did the same thing with Mike. The Food Not Bombs is now being surveilled by the health department. And, of course, no. That was the report from Kim Argula. For those, by the way, who want to contact Food Not Bombs, give a call to 425-3345. That's their old number. It's easier to remember. It's back again, 425-3345. And, they're being surveilled. You've also street newspapers, which we had to fight for 4 years after they tackled Steve Argue and took him down to the sidewalk in 98. He won his lawsuit. He won some money from the city, but JJ in May got a ticket for exactly the same thing, displaying a street newspaper. And you know, it's like they've decided.
You know, there is not a single precedent for a printed word being prevented from being distributed and sold downtown anywhere. The Supreme Court has held up every case ever in the history of the United States.
Well, I don't know about
selling this.
I don't know about that. I know
giving away, vending information.
I mean, I know that some
other than malls, that's the only exception.
Well, I know some street newspapers in Ohio, for example, have had to fight to get against repressive local ordinances. But I think Santa Cruz and California, particularly, I am not aware that such ordinances are constitutional in this area. California has a more expansive constitution,
right,
and I think that you may well be
but on
right.
On the federal level, they're going to anybody that's got $500,000 wants to appeal it is going to win.
You would hope so, though.
That's
we have the Rehnquist Thomas Court. You know,
you
I don't
got
know.
A half a million. Doesn't matter.
But
any
but,
court would hold it up. They could not. This is one thing that couldn't be reversed.
The question is, though, we can't rely on the judges, we can't rely on the Rehnquist Court, and we can't even find the attorneys to do this.
And
I think
you need $500,000 to do it. Forget about it.
We need the people,
the
community out there, people like yourself, people like other folks who are getting, we're all getting older and grayer, but,
I've gotten older and grayer, and the thing is that, you know, I had a whole speech set up to go to council, and I never did it.
You can do
because
it on
I'm
Tuesday.
I'm watching and saying, oh, man, you know, I went through this, like, 40 years ago with housing ordinances, and it was stacked against me from day one.
Oh, it is. But the only reason to go to city council is to talk to the community through the television.
Right. And that's exactly what my goal is going to be this time around. I'm actually going to hold up a sign with my phone number and my email address on it and say to the city council, do you know of anybody that wants to be involved in a class action suit against the city of Santa Cruz that's had their freedom of speech and expression rights violated? I'm going to do this in public, in front of the city council, and hopefully people that are watching the show will jot down those numbers, because this, to me, even though you say that the courts aren't going to be there, it still makes it something that is expensive to the city. The city's got to deal with it. They've got to look at it, and it may have some effect.
Yeah, and I think that people can do that at city council. They can stand up and appeal to the community to come out and do the kind of long-range, persistent, cumulative protest that will eventually, like civil rights movements in the 50s and 60s, have the kind of effect that the city council and the merchants can't ignore. But it is going to require steady, persistent, repeated pressure. It's going to require boycotts. It's going to require colorful protests. It's going to require a lot of good humor. It's going to require a lot of struggle, and it's not going to happen overnight. They're going to get their ordinances overnight. Yeah. That's what they're going to do. They're going to get them to Tuesday. That doesn't mean we can't use their time to let the community know just what is really going on here. And well, I mean, we won't have much time to do it, but we should try.
And the idiocy of all of the things that have made Santa Cruz, are being outlawed.
Yep.
Yeah,
that's right.
And if these fools, by the way, ever looked in the eyes of the kids playing hacky sack, and you will immediately get a kind of apologetic, am I blocking you? I have never had a kid deliberately block me. Or yeah, not stop when I'm within,
It's amazing how they don't have a clue, the people who are arguing against hacky sacking. Hacky sacking, they say, well, go play in a park. You don't play hacky sack in a park.
No.
You play it in an urban environment where you're likely to pick up people walking by who'll join in. You don't do it.
I'm afraid of, but I have to ask, who are they? And why do they hate us? Well, I was raised to believe in this American dream, all the greatness and glory, the way that it seemed. Our God was on our side, and God doesn't lie. So why do all these innocent people have to die? Who are they? And why do they hate us? Every color in the cloth has a history to tell. Ships across the ocean and the Liberty Bell. Heroes in the monuments, I know them by name. But now their granite jaws are shattered and their eyes are full of rain. My neighbor, she's a foreigner, I can't pronounce her name. When she talks about her homeland, her face fills with pain. She says she lost her children when the missiles hit. I don't know what to say, so I just change the subject. Who are they? And why do they hate us? I see the TV news and they're burning my flag in some faraway land where it's just another rag. The looks on their faces, they make me freeze. How in the world did we make so many enemies? Who are they? And why do they hate us? Thank you. unthinkable acts. Rage and retribution won't bring anybody back. Justice is alive, so subtle and sublime. Well, I'd like to believe them, but we're running out of time. I never paid much attention, guess I should have known. Every faraway country is somebody's home. Empires rise and empires fall. The world is big enough, there should be room for us all. Who are they? And why do they hate us?
Welcome to Bathrobes Pier's Broadsides, 3.5 hours of civil rights talk, and hopefully civil rights action here in Santa Cruz on 96.3 FM, Free Radio Santa Cruz. I'm your host, Robert Norris. We're going to be having a couple of guests in the studio as the show progresses this morning. We're expecting Michael True, local musician, a family man, and a diplomat who is attempting to negotiate or at least chat with Council members Kennedy and Premack, who have been big backers of the new dreadful downtown ordinances that are coming up for a final second reading, 7 o'clock on Tuesday night, day after tomorrow, at Santa Cruz City Council chambers at 809 Center Street across from the library. Be there and just say no. So we got lots of stuff coming up. A lot of it is around these dreadful downtown ordinances, and we're going to be talking about that. We're going to be playing some interviews. And, of course, later today there's going to be a protest demonstration, sort of a bit of theater to kick off the summer campaign, or I should say to continue the summer campaign. And that's